Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live in Studio North on Tuesday, August 20th in the year of our Lord, 2022. I am so glad that you can join me this morning. A topic throughout the next 3 hours will be my new Washington Post column, which is simply titled, Why Biden's Student Loan Bailout Will Backfire on Him. It recounts the disasters that have fallen as a result of this precipitous decision to forgive up to $40,000 per couple who are joining big law or big media or big journalism or big finance, while people who went right to work out of high school or maybe didn't even finish high school and went to work get nothing. And people are boiling mad about it. It's probably the most disastrous move of the Biden presidency after the collapse in the Afghanistan war. It's up there with hiring 87,000 IRS agents. The whole column is over at the opinion page of the Washington Post. The easiest way to get it is to follow me on Twitter. Well, I've posted it a few places at my Twitter account. But you can also go to the Washington Post opinion page or Google Hugh Hewitt and Washington Post. The news of the morning. Trump's Mar-a-Lago documents have already been examined by the FBI, the Justice Department tells the judge. A, quote, filter team completed its review, and they found some things they shouldn't have taken. They've told the judge that. And they'll give them back. Don't worry, they say. Trust us. Do you trust them? I don't. I believe the federal judge reviewing the request from President Trump, former President Trump, to appoint a special master should be expedited and be in place immediately. I do not believe the FBI. I do not believe the DOJ. I think that this was a disaster by the Bureau. It is unprecedented. Tell me why. Just tell me why. Former Secretary of State Clinton's server and all of the classified materials on it were never seized in a warrant-driven search. But President Trump's box of documents from the White House, which he could have declassified, we don't know what were. I just don't understand how anyone can defend this. It's not defensible. We do not. And by the way, I would prefer that neither of them be subject to a search warrant, given the political ramifications of that. I've long said I don't believe there's a deep state. I believe there's a permanent government. And I believe the FBI has had it out for Trump for 7 years. In some of the senior political reaches, not the average FBI man or woman fighting crime on the streets, not the FBI that is out there against organized crime or trying to stop fentanyl, not the FBI that is trying to counter Chinese espionage. No, a few long-serving anti-Trump senior political people, and Christopher Wray, doing his best, has not been able to root them out. And unfortunately, they got to Merrick Garland on the search warrant, and it's a deep embarrassment. The Wall Street Journal editorializes about this morning, the Comey-Clinton document standard in Trump. This is going to continue on. They also have a column from the editorial board at the Journal. The Mar-a-Lago affidavit, is that all there is? The redacted 38 pages add to the evidence that the FBI search really was all about a dispute over documents. Begun by NARA, the National Archives and Record Administration, run by a temporary person, because David Ferriero, who is a fine archivist, left. And it's a very left-wing organization with a few serious people in it. It's just very left-wing. I've dealt with them for 30 years. You just have to understand how left-wing the National Archives and Records Administration is. This is hard to believe happened. New York Times today, how bad is the teacher shortage? Depends on where you live. I don't know why that's a story. It's always been a story. The best student, the best school districts get the best teachers. The worst school districts have trouble hiring. There's a reason we need to go to choice. There's a reason we need the Arizona experiment to spread, why we need the Florida loosening of teacher credentialing to allow for officers in the military who have served 4 or more years and received an honorable discharge to be immediately credentialed. Iran sent its first shipment of drones to Russia for use in Ukraine. I remind you, the big three of our opposition, China, Russia, and Iran. Iran is sending drones. They didn't work. Meanwhile, Ukraine war is depleting U.S. ammunition stockpile, sparking Pentagon concern, according to the Journal. The war in Ukraine has depleted American stocks of some types of ammunition, and the Pentagon has been slow to replenish its arsenal. You know why it's slow? Because the United States Congress, run by Democrats, can't pass an appropriations bill. It's an embarrassment. It is endangering our troops and our allies, and we need to vote Republican up and down the ballot. By the way, did I mention to you that yesterday Philadelphia announced that they are remasking students in the back to school for at least 10 days? At least 10 days. Here is the superintendent of Philadelphia School District, Tony Watlingen, yesterday at a presser, cut number 10.
Pandemic has had a lingering effect on us. It may continue to present some challenges. Today marks an opportunity to steer our students toward a brand new beginning.
Do not vote for any school board member unless you are rock solid certain that they are against masking. They will not force masking on anyone at any time ever for the coronavirus pandemic ever again, and that they do not require vaccines. Unless you are certain of that, vote for challengers. Do your research. Do not vote for a single incumbent. Don't vote for a single Democrat, period. Anywhere. Look at this mess. Look at this mess. 87,000 new IRS agents. The Afghanistan debacle. Inflation at 13% in the grocery store. You saw gas prices during the summer. The same thing's going to happen. Wait till you buy your heating fuel oil in the Northeast and other cold places of the United States that use fuel oil in the summer. We've got a recession on the way. The market's jittery. I'll do the market update next. And we have complete collapse in America's ability to project deterrence. Companies are attacking Texas, meanwhile, over their, quote, politicized ESG list. Texas did a very smart thing. Texas passed a law that said, Texas, you may not, Texas pension company, you may not invest in these 10 companies which have blacklisted our firms that produce oil. They include BlackRock and Credit Suisse, UBS, BNP Paribas. These are companies that said, we're getting out of the fossil fuel business. Texas said, we're getting out of your investment pools. Good for Texas. NASA canceled its launch of the Artemis Moon Project, par for the course for the Biden administration. Back to my news. Ukraine says that its offensive near Kherson has begun and it's succeeding. This is so important for the world to see that Ukraine will not yield. Liz Truss, who's going to be the Prime Minister of Great Britain in about a week, said, we don't have such a special relationship with this gang of people in the United States, meaning Tony Blinken, Joe Biden, and the appeasers. She's against that. She's also announced, it's in the Telegraph this morning, they're going to up their production of North Sea oil because Liz Truss is going to be, I hope she's better than Thatcher 2.0. I want her to be better on oil production. I want her to be better on deregulation. I want to go further and farther to let the market work. Story in the Washington Post. Greenland ice sheet set to raise sea levels by nearly a foot, study finds. I thought, well, that's interesting. When is that going to happen? By the year 2100, there's a 3.3% chance of the grassland of the Greenland ice sheet melting. If you want to lose sleep over that, you go right ahead. Xi Jinping's vision for tech self-reliance in China, that's not working out, but in the Financial Times, on a par with Russia's. Rise in Chinese espionage alarms Europe. They should have been alarmed a long time ago. Meanwhile, the International Monetary Fund has approved a $1 billion bailout of Pakistan. I do not know why we're bailing Pakistan out of anything, given what a crazy situation that country is in. And Olaf Scholz, the accidental chancellor in Germany, can't go anywhere without being booed. He's a socialist like Joe Biden's team in the White House are socialists, and it hasn't worked out for Germany, and it's not working out for us. Remember, my new Washington Post column, the Biden student loan bailout backfiring, is at the Washington Post. I'd love to hear from JDs, MBAs, and PhDs, and MDs who are going to get between $10,000 and $40,000 in financial relief, depending on if they're married, at 1-800-520-1234. The lines are open, 1-800-520-1234. Are you getting a student loan bailout that you shouldn't? Because most of America is very angry about this. Joe Biden does it again. Another faceplant. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America, to Hewitt. The Beltway has many, many competitions within it right now. One is underway to become the minority whip in a new House Republican majority. Should that come to pass, Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker, Steve Scalise, the majority leader, who would be the whip? Many people think it will be Elise Stefanik, but I think Elise Stefanik wants to be chairman of Education and Labor and raise her national profile. Whip is an inside game. Jim Banks of Indiana is my favorite candidate for that. And it turns out David Drucker was doing some reporting and he finds out Jim Banks is campaigning for it. What do you say, David? Good morning.
Good morning, Hugh. Yeah, I was in Iowa over the weekend and Jim Banks was just outside of Cedar Rapids speaking at an event for Ashley Hinson, a freshman representative from that part of the country. And he's traveling all over the place. And of course, this is what you do when you want to try and build a majority, win in November, but also when you want to try and collect chits and votes for a leadership election that will occur after election day. And, of course, Republicans need to win the majority for this slot to open up. But I spent a little time with Banks, and he talked about how he views the job, what he thinks of Kevin McCarthy as a potential speaker, and how he thinks a Republican majority will function if they can win. And you know, remember, it's the problem you want, but winning these majorities, especially when there's still going to be a Democrat in the White House and a Senate, even if the Republicans win the majority without 60 votes, it can be very challenging.
Now, the reason I like Banks is he can communicate. Leader McCarthy, soon-to-be Speaker McCarthy, Whip Scalise, soon-to-be Majority Leader Scalise, are both gifted communicators. So is Elise Stefanik, who's at the conference chair and would ordinarily move up to Whip. But I think she wants to go big and be in the public eye. Whip is not a public eye job when you're in the majority. It's a job. It has to be done well. But it's usually an inside job. Is Banks happy being an insider and communicating with insiders? And occasionally the Beltway media matters a lot if you're the whip.
Well, we will find out. You know, the thing about being the whip is sometimes you have to be the bad guy. And sometimes you have to do the sort of dirty work that can get you in the public eye. But, you know, it's about vote counting. It's about educating members on policy. And whips don't have the levers of the party and the way they did, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, where you could dangle party fundraising and campaign stops and all of that as the only way that these obscure members were going to be able to you know, build platforms for themselves. Obviously, members these days have social media, digital fundraising, cable television news, so they don't need party figures the way they used to. So it's made being the whip a very challenging job. Banks seems to be very interested in doing this. And if, you know, if he can defeat Chairman Emmer, National Republican Congressional Committee Chairman, and Drew Ferguson, Chief Deputy Minority Whip, in this contest, then he will, you know, he'll find out what it's like. But he's chairman of the Republican Study Committee. Obviously, that's been a platform for previous Republicans who want to get into leadership, Steve Scalise, Vice President Mike Pence, and others.
You know, Tom Emmer is a very good guy, and he's done a great job as NRCC chair. I asked myself, who do you want on the Sunday shows when McCarthy and Scalise don't want to go out? And I have to say, probably Banks. But I also like him because he's young husband, young father, a military veteran of the Afghan war. He went there. He did logistics. He understands supply chains. He understands a lot of this. Tom Emmer is a very strong candidate. But do you agree with me that Elise Stefanik will want to be the education and labor chair?
You know, this is one of these parlor games. The Stefanik team insists that this is not what she wants at all, that she hasn't ruled out running for whip, and that there's a really good chance she just remains as conference chairwoman, right?
Which would, you know, can I break in there? David, if you're the education chair, you get to lead the Republican reform of education begun by Doug Ducey in Florida and, in Arizona, where everyone gets to go wherever they want, and Ron DeSantis in Florida. You are in the headlines every day if you're Elise Stefanik and you're chairing education.
I don't disagree with you. And this is a story that I have been pursuing for several weeks, because it is true that Elise Stefanik wants to up her national profile and imagines greater things for herself than, let's say, the House of Representatives, not to diminish the House. But my latest reporting is that she is lately less interested in chairing the Education and Workforce Committee and more interested in remaining in leadership in some fashion.
Okay, I got to get one more quick question in, David.
Yeah.
You. The student loan debacle. I think it's a nightmare for Team Biden. What are you reporting? This is not your opinion. What do you hear from Democrats and Republicans about the bailout of MDs, PhDs, MBAs, et cetera?
That it's a mixed bag, in that it's a high, high priority for the Democratic base. And Biden's big weakness lately has been the Democratic base. But that it's very problematic from a national perspective and from a 2024 perspective in the states that matter. So it cuts both ways. Maybe helps in 22 a little, could hurt a lot in 24.
I think it's going to hurt Bennett, Cortez Masto, Tim Ryan, Maggie Hassan. Everyone who doesn't say stop this madness gets hurt. David M. Drucker, follow him on Twitter. always read his columns in the Washington Examiner, one of the best reporters, and his colleague Byron York, another one, up next on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Stay tuned. America, bonjour, hi, Canada, Hugh Hewitt here, live on August 30th in the year of our Lord, 2022. Byron York joins me, as he does most Tuesdays at this hour, for which I'm eternally grateful. Byron has been writing a lot about the Trump papers and the fiasco that that has become. I also want to probe the student loan debacle that Joe Biden is now mired in. Good morning, Byron York. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. Doing well. Thank you.
Let's begin with the student loan debacle. I have a column about it in the Washington Post today. When Tim Ryan, Cortez Masto, and Michael Bennett, all three Democrats who want to be in the Senate in January of 2023, are inveighing against the loan policy, it's a fiasco. What do you make of it? How big of a damage did the Biden administration do to itself?
Well, I think you have to understand it in terms simply of the Democratic base. I thought the statistics you cited about the District of Columbia, the number of the amount of student loan debt held in the District of Columbia was pretty revealing. I think this is another one of these Biden plays that goes for the Democratic base, like what he's doing at the border. I saw a report in CNN, of all places, yesterday about just how many people from what they call other countries are coming across the U.S. border, meaning people who are not from Mexico or the Northern Triangle countries. They're places all around the world. The word has gotten out that the way to enter the United States without papers and be allowed to stay is to illegally cross the U.S.-Mexico border. So Biden is doing what he's doing on the border for a reason, and I think that is to mollify, appeal to a very loud segment of his base. So I look at the loan thing as an indication of that, but it's so vastly expensive that people who are Democrats, who are from swing districts, are obviously nervous about it. So many of their voters are going to be paying for it but not benefiting from it.
Yeah, you know, Byron, I don't think he created any new Democrats with it. And
no.
I believe he created a lot of new Republicans with it. People who were independents who paid off their loans, parents who worked, saved, took out second mortgages, kids who played 35 hours a week of a scholarship requirement to play sport. I just think he angered a lot of people who earned their college degrees, and he certainly angered people who bought a truck and bought some tools when they got out of school or went to the BMW school. I think it's in Montana, like one of my son's friends did, to become a BMW mechanic. It's really divisive.
Well, but look at the 2020 Democratic primaries, which I think we always anytime Biden does something, I think we need to go back and look at the 2020 primaries. Look, you know, for example, I had just been talking about the border. In the 2020 Democratic primaries, the two candidates who made it pretty much the farthest against Biden were advocating far more student debt cancellation. Bernie Sanders just wanted to get rid of all of it, and Elizabeth Warren wanted to get rid of most of it. I think her figure was $50,000 of student loan cancellation. So if you look in the kind of weird world that is the Democratic primary, Biden is actually kind of a moderate here. But he's facing pressure from these people who wanted to do even more.
Now, Byron, I just want to close and then move to the Trump papers by noting, if you relieve people of up to $40,000 of debt that they're carrying right now, and it's a married couple,
yep,
they're going to spend more money. That's
yep,
inflationary. Lawrence Summers noted it yesterday. And it's not going to be inflationary next year. It's going to be inflationary next week.
Yeah. And which, by the way, let's assume for purposes of conversation, even though it's not true, that the Inflation Reduction Act reduced inflation. This is more than negated by the student loan action. And, you know, you hear a lot of Democrats say of Republicans, well, what's their plan for inflation? Well, the first plan for inflation is to stop doing harm. First, do no harm. And the Biden administration, from the American Rescue Plan through the, quote, Inflation Reduction Act, through this incredible unilateral executive action from the president, has kept doing harm.
You know, I do believe Jerome Powell and the Fed had to say we're bringing pain because of this
yeah,
thing. Now, Byron, just take the floor and fill us in on where the Trump papers are, what you think are the political ramifications of it, and what to expect as the election season unfolds.
Well, people who watch the papers are kind of excited today because there's expected to be a Justice Department filing in this case, which might say a little more about why they did what they did. But I can't exaggerate to you the level of excitement there is, again, among the kind of Democratic base, especially in the media, about this. I took a long drive yesterday and listened to a lot of CNN and MSNBC to see what they were saying about it. They were devoting entire newscasts to this. So the problem is everything that we've learned about from the search warrant and from the affidavit supporting the search warrant, none of it is answers this question, which is, what are the papers about? And I think what we're seeing from people who knew Trump, saw it from Mick Mulvaney a couple of days ago, his former chief of staff, is this idea that these papers are about the Russia matter. Because we don't know what the paper's about, but we do know Trump. And we do know his interests and, shall we say, his obsessions. And there were a number of fights over classified documents while he was president. And they were all one thing: his belief, not without basis, that he had been unfairly targeted by the FBI, and his belief that there were documents that were classified that the FBI was hiding that would prove that he had been unfairly targeted, that would exonerate him. And he engaged in a long fight to try to bring those documents to light. That's what the so-called Nunes memo, which came out in February of 2018, was about. It showed us that the FBI had used the Steele dossier to actually get this a search warrant on Carter Page. So Trump wanted more and more declassification. He deputized or he authorized then Attorney General William Barr to declassify everything in the Trump-Russia investigation, and he faced an enormous amount of resistance, didn't get a lot of that done. So more and more people, I think, who know Trump are suggesting that these documents are probably involved in the Trump-Russia investigation. And remember, go back to the Nunes memo. It was classified, and Democrats and the FBI were saying, this is terrible. This should never be exposed. It will endanger people's lives. It will expose sources and methods. These are our nation's most precious secrets. They said all of that stuff. And then the material was declassified, and it didn't damage anything except the reputation of the FBI.
Now, Byron, I talked to Jared Kushner at length last week after reading his memoir. I also think the president took stuff that he likes, like the letter from Kim Jong-un. I mean, I think he just did.
Yes.
Yeah, and so that's partly Trump. But I want to ask you the key question. Byron York is as fair as the day is long on June 21st. And so he'll give me the honest, straight-up answer here, and he studied both. The difference in terms of importance between the emails on Hillary Clinton's server, which were never seized, and in fact, she deleted half of them, and the Trump papers in the basement with the lock, no matter how bad, or, you know, it's a facility surrounded by the Secret Service. Is there a difference between the level of sensitivity of what Secretary Clinton had and what Donald Trump had?
Hard to actually say, because my whole point is we don't know what's in the documents. But I think the Clinton example, it's impossible for me to figure out how you prosecute Trump after you did not prosecute Clinton. And remember, we learned later in the Inspector General's report about the Clinton investigation that Jim Comey, then the head of the FBI, began writing an exoneration statement, which he delivered right after July 4th on 2016. He began writing this exoneration statement pretty much right at the beginning of the investigation and well before the key players had been interviewed. And remember, the thing about Hillary Clinton's situation was she mishandled these documents. And remember, a lot of this case about Trump is not just classified documents. It's just documents that he has, quote, mishandled. Well, she did that. She decided what was an official document and what was not. She deleted more than 30,000 of them. She used the that famous stuff. I've just forgotten the name of the program they used. Anyway, she deleted all this stuff. She smashed the devices, the phones, and all of that was a unilateral decision by Hillary Clinton.
And not actionable.
That's actionable.
Why they did not make a demand in court for Trump to turn the papers over and then fight it out in court, I will never, ever understand, except Trump derangement syndrome. Byron York does not have that. He is as fair as the day is long on June 21st, and I'm glad he joins me every Tuesday. Thank you, Byron. Follow him on Twitter at Byron York and in the Washington Examiner. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Welcome back, America, to Hewitt. Earlier today, guests were talking about the complete catastrophe that is the American southern border. Morgan Ortega is formerly senior State Department spokesperson for Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, a member of the Nixon Seminar, my friend of long standing. She and I were together in Wyoming when the Republicans gathered. She interviewed the national security veterans. I interviewed newcomers to the races. Good morning, Morgan. Where are you?
Good morning. I am in McAllen, Texas. I'm right by the Rio Grande. I actually saw it yesterday, went and saw the wall for the first time. So it's exciting, but also, I guess, incredibly sad, too. As I know, I started hearing the stories just yesterday of the community and the victims, of these heinous border policies. So I'm here, Hugh, with 8 women who are running for federal office, 7 for the House, 1 for the Senate. Most of them are coming to the border for the first time, but we do have current sitting Congresswoman Myra Flores with us and many other Hispanic Republican women. It's going to be a very, very powerful day with all of these leaders of the Republican Party, these strong ladies.
I talked to soon-to-be Senator Tiffany Smiley in the first hour today. Is she among your delegation?
She is. Yes, absolutely. We're very excited to have her here, and I'm with you. I think she's going to win that race.
Who else have you got down there? Is Jen Ruth Green? I don't know who you have.
Okay, so we have Myra Flores, as I talked about, won that special election. Cassie Garcia, whose husband is a border agent. She's in Texas 28. Monica De La Cruz, also here in Texas 15. Amanda Atkins, running out of Kansas. Jen Kiggins from Virginia, Navy veteran. Go Navy.
Lori
Chavez. Yeah, I know we always do that from Oregon, and April Becker from Virginia.
That is a great delegation. Now, I am very familiar with the California-Mexico border. I crossed it every Christmas for many, many years because my church did a party and a celebration with a Tijuana orphanage. But that was a highly patrolled and very, very secure border. Fentanyl is a problem there. I'm not sure what it's like near McAllen, and I don't know about the Texas or the Arizona border. What have you heard so far, either from the congresswoman-to-be who is married to a Border Patrol agent, or just generally as you got there?
Yeah, you know, it's fascinating because we went yesterday to check it out. We'll have a press conference live at 1 o'clock Eastern today on the border wall. We drove really not that far, and I saw a huge gap in the border wall. I took a picture. I mean, it was a very easy part of the fence that you could get through. That's just one thing that I saw visually. We'll be going around today and seeing more. But once you're here on the ground, I will say I'm like many Americans, most Americans. I've never been here before. So this is my first time seeing everything up close. It's not surprising whenever you see it here on the Rio, when you see the gaps in the fence. You know, 609 migrants have died on the U.S. side, I believe, just this year crossing the border. Border Patrol down here has rescued over 19,000 migrants. This is on the U.S. side of the border, facing extreme death and other problems. Human smuggling is just through the roof. Do you know these human smuggling cartels? I couldn't believe this number when I read it. $13 billion that they're set to make. $13 billion! I mean, that's more than like most, you know, startup companies. Most companies in America could only dream to make $13 billion.
They're certainly not paying the 15% global minimum tax, nor should they. They're evil. I mean, they are evil. A guest earlier today, I don't want to misattribute it, pointed out that we now have non-Central American and Mexican immigrants soaring because international cartels are moving people onto Central American or Mexican soil and then walking them into the United States. And Ken Follett just wrote a novel about this, about how folks come from Sudan into Europe. But now the rat lines, as they were called in the old days, we don't want to dehumanize these people. They are suffering, and many of the children are abused. Absolutely. And the women are raped, but they are running all over the world, and they're making, they save for years, they give all their money to a smuggler, and off they go into this awful circumstance.
Well, and it's not just, and that's, I'm so glad you brought that up, Hugh, because that's what we're here to really highlight. You're going to see, if all of you, if your listeners are watching the news today, you're going to see a visual of all of the Republican, many of the Republican women who are about to enter Congress for the first time. These are candidates. You're going to see them standing on stage with me after hearing the stories of the victims, especially the Latina women. That's something that we have to focus on. You know, Latina women and children and teenage girls are disproportionately affected by this. Yes, there's rape, absolutely, but it gets even worse. Some of them are being killed and sold for body parts. They are trafficked. And these are all as a result of these policies from the Biden administration, which are completely inhumane. You know, I would go as far as saying, Hugh, that I think this is one of the worst human rights catastrophes currently happening in the Western Hemisphere right now.
It's I think you're right.
Terrible and awful in Venezuela, but we have a human rights catastrophe on our border. And if we were any other nation, the United Nations would be investigating us right now.
And we do not have to do it. It could end tomorrow. It could end tomorrow by reintroducing Title 42, by finishing the wall, and by changing the rhetoric. Because I just finished Jared Kushner's Breaking History memoir. For the first 2 years of Trump, they struggled to figure out what they were doing for 2 years. Jared took over the wall. They had built 35 miles in 2 years. They built 415 miles. But the president's rhetoric alone of law enforcement as opposed to vilifying Border Patrol under Biden had a deterrent effect because incentives matter and rhetoric communicates loudly, and the cartels know they're going to get broke and busted if they come up.
That's absolutely right. I mean, we have to support our Border Patrol. And remember, in the Trump administration, what was happening, you saw the left. They were actually talking about completely defunding ICE and getting rid of the Border Patrol. Like, it's one thing not to support them. It's another thing when you heard AOC and others wanting to get rid of them in their entirety. So when that's the rhetoric coming from the base of your party, it's not at all surprising that these Border Patrol agents aren't supported and they're demoralized. And this is, by the way, I mean, where else, what other civilized society does, you know, does this happen where you just allow women to be raped and trafficked and sold for body parts? And not just women, right? I mean, the stories are very horrific. Just last week, where I was standing, as I said yesterday, on the Rio Grande, there was a three-year-old that drowned. I mean, my daughter, God forbid, is about to be 2 years old. And for me, I just had a mix of sadness and anger when I read that story. You know, and
yeah, Morgan, about 10 years ago, I was campaigning in Arizona for a Republican candidate. I can't remember who it was. And some dreamers stood up and they made their case. And I'm very favorably disposed towards an accommodation of dreamers, the regularization of dreamers. AOC and the left want to talk about the dreamers. They don't want to talk about that 3-year-old or the rape or the trafficking. They just don't want to see what is right in front of their eye. I hope you get widespread coverage. My guess is there will not be one story on MSNBC or five stories on CNN. I mean, there won't. They do not want people to know what's going on down there. And the blue bubble simply seals off the information that you are trying to provide today.
Well, and this is why the president still has not been here. You know, it's shameful, right? You can argue about the role of government in many ways. I think something that, you know, Republicans and Democrats at least used to agree on is that the role of government is to protect the United States, to protect her citizens, and that includes protecting our border. And there's no good reason why Biden has not been down here. other than I think he just doesn't want to see what's actually going on, right? If he comes down here, he brings attention to it. And it's everybody else's problem, of course, until Governor Abbott starts, sending these migrants in buses to major cities where suddenly they need the National Guard and it's a catastrophe for them.
You know, I reject replacement theory, and I've often argued with my colleagues in the business who believe in it that it's simply not true. There is no, in fact, Latinos are moving to the Republicans very quickly. It's not replacement theory. It is the left wing of the Democratic Party believes in no borders. And they got that out of the old Democratic Party, which wanted regularization or citizenship for Latinos after 1986 amnesty. But as a result of the politicization of the issue, Democrats won't come to grips with the reality of what has happened. And it's the cartels, Morgan. It's just the most evil people in the world are making money off of desperate families who want their children to grow up in the United States. They take their $3,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 and they never hear from their children again. They think in their minds their children are going to get across, be given a home in the north somewhere, El Norte, and that somehow things will work out. They do not know what happens to them. And Chuck Box, among other novelists, and Brad Thor and others have tried to make Americans aware of what human trafficking and child trafficking means in the United States. It's so awful. I can't stand to talk about it, but it's the reality.
It is the reality, and the stories need to be heard. I mean, and it's not just, by the way, as you talked about, all the over 100, I think it's over 120 nationalities that are coming over the border. Just last week, I read a report about a Chinese couple and a child coming over the border. It's a ticking time bomb for the wrong person. We have seen the number of people on the FBI's terror watch list coming over. I think that we're over like 66 already this year. This is just apprehension. So you don't know how many people are getting through that we don't even see.
And we assume that they are more skilled. If the Iranians are trying to kill someone in the United States, we know that they can get across the southern border.
They are trying to kill someone.
So, Morgan, the press conference, if people are just watching online, is there any way they can watch it for sure online at 1 p.m. Eastern?
That's a great question that I don't know the answer to, and I should. I know that there's going to be several news outlets with cameras there. So, Hugh, I'll get back to you on that. I would think and I hope that Fox News is going to cover it, but we will. I'll be posting pictures and videos from my social media accounts at Morgan Ortegas. Polaris National Security is my group that is here to shine the light on this, and Winning for Women, led by Annie Dickerson. We're doing this together. She supports women running for Congress around the country. So we'll make sure on all of our social media handles that we're getting this out, and hopefully you'll see something live on TV.
I will keep my eye on the Morgan Ortegas Twitter account. I'm not an Instagram or Facegrammer, but I will watch Twitter for the feed. Morgan, if you find out where people can watch it live, please tell us. I so appreciate unsolicited advice to CNN. You ought to have Morgan Ortegas anchoring a show for you because she's very good at this. Morgan, thank you for joining me early in the morning in Texas. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Senator Tom Cotton serves the great state of Arkansas. He joins me now. Good morning, Senator Cotton.
Good morning, Hugh. It's good to be back on with you. Good to be on this morning with so many of my fellow veterans and great candidates for Congress and the Senate all across the country. Thanks for having all those folks on.
I want to talk about Rich McCormick and Jen Ruth Green, et cetera, but I want to begin by asking you about a tweet earlier today when Tom Ricks, who you may or may not know, but he's a fine war correspondent, he said, he quoted an article in The Atlantic, quote, "Today's peculiar institution, the modern GOP." And of course, the peculiar institution is slavery. What do you make of that slander?
Well, Hugh, I don't know the context. I haven't seen that particular posting, so I'll refrain from commenting on it because I do have a lot of respect for Tom Ricks' war correspondents, some of the books he's written in the past as well. I will say this, that the folks at Atlantic seem to have had a nervous breakdown over the last 6 years, like so many folks in the mainstream media or the Democratic Party. They've just had a break with reality, and it caused them to say the most outlandish things. We've had some of these people in front of our committees, you know, nominees that I worked with somewhat in the my first couple of years in the Senate. I didn't agree with them on a lot of issues. I thought they were serious national security professionals. And it turns out when you look at their social media accounts during the Trump era, it's like they lost their mind.
I agree with you, and I have asked Tom to please explain, because I can't believe he believes that the Republican Party is the moral equivalent of slavery, but we shall see. Senator Cotton, I have been blasting the Joe Biden bailout of degreed professionals. And I mean, you can be an MBA couple about to go to work at Bain or McKinsey or Boston Consulting Group and get a $40,000 check from the government, even as you're about to make $500,000 next year. What do you make of this crazy program?
Well, Hugh, you're not the only one blasting it. Folks all across Arkansas have been blasting this to me for the last week. It's just, first off, plainly unconstitutional. The president doesn't have the power to reassign this debt from people who took it out knowingly to the American taxpayer. The law he cites is really just about specific disputes, you know, in one-off cases, you know, like a lawsuit, for instance. So it is unconstitutional. We should never forget that. I believe courts will strike it down eventually. But second, it is grossly unfair. I thought your column, The Washington Post, captured a lot of these stories or vignettes or anecdotes that I've heard from Arkansans, you know, those who didn't go to college, who went to work and then maybe started a job, built out a landscape business or a pest control business. They aren't going to benefit from this. Young men and women who went to college but worked as a waitress or as a bartender to pay their way through, people who joined the Army for the GI Bill, served overseas for 3, 4, 5 years, and then used the GI Bill to go to school. People who took out loans and repaid those loans are people whose parents worked hard, maybe worked, you know, two shifts to save money and scrimp and sacrifice to put their kids through college. No, none of those are going to benefit from this student loan bailout. Finally, I just add there's a strong whiff of corruption here, Hugh. The Washington, D.C. area has some of the highest per capita concentration of student loans in America. So you have a bunch of young liberal staffers who went to expensive schools that didn't try to be do-gooders in Congress or the Biden White House or left-wing think tanks and activist organizations. And then they're prattling on in the ears of politicians in Washington about how a student loan bailout is the most essential thing in America. When, as you say, you've got families, households that can make up to $250,000 a year, Hugh, $250,000 a year, they're going to get $40,000 of loan forgiveness, which, by the way, because of Congress, is also not going to be treated as taxable income as any other kind of loan forgiveness is. So there's program as well.
I think it's worse than that, because I read the Financial Times yesterday on the starting salaries for people who are just about to begin work at the big three, McKinsey, Bain, and the Boston Consulting Group. Each of those people who are about to start will make $250,000 in 2023. Their loans will be forgiven in 2022. So $500,000 can go to a couple of Bain consultants who are married or living together, and they will have $40,000 in debt wiped out. It is the craziest, the most inflationary, but we've heard you say that. Let me move, if I can, to the military vets we're talking to. Rich McCormick in Georgia, Jen Ruth Green in Indiana, Eli Crane in Arizona, Derek Van Orden in Wisconsin. You were kind of the first wave when you ran into Congress as a veteran of the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War. I think this is for the great good benefit of the United States. And I know you've got a pack and you're out there helping these people. Do you think that the American electorate cares about service in the uniform when they vote for Congress people?
Yeah, Hugh, very much so. You can tell by the number of veterans who have served in our Congress before, have served in high-ranking positions in our government. And I think increasingly you'll see these veterans winning elections. When I was elected in 2012, I wasn't the first veteran of Afghanistan or Iraq, but we were part of a very early leading edge. You know, I was only 35, which is still a little young for Congress, and certainly young for the Senate in 2014. But over time, I've developed what I call my Veterans to Victories program, where I look in particular at House races. You know, my generation of warriors were probably now in their late 30s to late 40s. That's the time when a lot of people have established themselves in life. Maybe they've run for local office. Maybe they've started a business, and they think ways they can do more for their country. And running for the House of Representatives is a good first step. So we've recruited and mentored and supported a lot of great candidates all across the country. Some of those are in Congress and making a big difference, like Matt Gallagher up in Wisconsin, and some of the ones that you just mentioned are going to be outstanding new members of Congress, like Derek Van Orden. I would say that although it's not as common yet in the Senate to have veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan, we have a great advocate for veterans up in Washington State. I know Tiffany Smiley was on your show earlier. Her husband was grievously wounded, and she didn't just help nurse him back to health, but also fought the Army bureaucracy who wanted to retire him because he was blinded in the attack that he suffered. But then also Scotty and Tiffany Smiley have spent much of their time over recent years in Washington advocating for veterans, advocating for improvements in the VA. And Tiffany Smiley will be a great senator for the state of Washington. And she'll not only care for veterans, our troops, but also address so many of the challenges that Washington State has, from crime and drugs and homelessness to rampant inflation. So I've been a big supporter of Tiffany Smiley from the very beginning. I encourage all your listeners to get behind her as well.
Senator Cotton, I also had Morgan Ortegas on this morning, and she's at the border with a group of a dozen candidates. I'm astonished that this is, I know it's a story on Fox News, but a lot of the country is oblivious to what has happened. It's the complete breakdown of any deterrent to crossing into the United States, and that's an incentive for the cartels and the worst human beings on the planet to abuse, rape, disfigure, sell into child slavery, thousands and thousands of children and young women, and America is not doing anything about it.
Well, to be specific, Joe Biden's not doing anything about it. And I think what Americans are about to do about it is repudiate the Democrats at the election. Again, I hear about this routinely across Arkansas. We're not too far from that border. But, you know, when you have 2 million illegal aliens crossing the border every year, Hugh, when you have more than 100,000 overdose deaths every year, every state's a border state and every town is a border town. And I hear it whether I'm in Arkansas, whether I'm in Minnesota, whether I'm in Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, everywhere I go. People are appalled that the Democrats have basically stopped enforcing and protecting our border. In fact, as you say, they are rewarding and encouraging people to cross the border. I remember going to the border last year at the beginning of this surge and speaking to a lot of the migrants and asking them why they were here. And you know, they're often portrayed as people fleeing persecution and violence. Not a single one of them said they had been persecuted because of their religious beliefs or their political views. Not a single one said anything about violence. They all said something like, a better job, I can get in, or just simply Biden. That's why we have this border crisis.
So, Senator, let me turn to the attempt by the Blue Bubble to persuade Blue Bubble people, not just that student loan forgiveness was a good idea. It wasn't. It's a horrible idea. But also that they're not going to get wiped out. This is they grabbed hold of a special election in New York that they barely won. They tried to turn it into momentum. I saw a raft of stories about how the Democrats are coming back. I don't believe it. I don't believe it for a second. You're out there and all the, you know, you're working for Herschel, J.D. Vance, Blake Masters. You're working for Tiffany Smiley and Joe O'Day. I know you're making visits all over the country. What do you feel about the election in November?
I think we're going to win, Hugh, but we should not be complacent. You know, the Democrats do have advantages. They have a vast, vast trove of money. They're outspending a lot of our candidates. As you say, they have the liberal media behind them running interference for them, you know, like a flying wedge on a kickoff in football. What they don't have are results that they can take to the American people. The Democrats and the Democrats are alone responsible for Americans struggling to make ends meet when they fill up at the pump or buy groceries at the grocery store. They're responsible for this crisis at the border that has led to more crime and more drugs in our communities. They're responsible for the surge in crime that you see all across America. In each case, they are making life less rewarding, less safe, less prosperous for normal, hardworking Americans. We can't take that for granted, though. We have to press those points in our campaigns, and we have to explain exactly how the Democrats are responsible and what we'll do to turn things around.
Last question. I think the most easy to understand thing for a voter is that their grocery bill has gone through the ceiling, 13% year over year. What they just did with the student loan forgiveness is going to increase the cost of everything. But it's groceries where the rubber meets the road, not just gas. That's come down a little bit. But groceries have skyrocketed, Senator Cotton. What do you think candidates ought to lead with?
Well, I think they ought to lead with just a complete breakdown of order and normality in the lives of Americans. And they see it everywhere. They see it at the grocery store every week when they go to the grocery store. They see it when they fill up at the gas pump. They see it when they try to take their kids to a local park and they can't do so because there's drug paraphernalia or homeless vagrants there. You know, they read reports on neighborhood social media or see it in local news of carjackings and home break-ins in broad daylight. All of these things are sad reminders of the total breakdown of the order and normality that normal Americans should be able to expect from their government, but they haven't received it now for a year and a half from the Biden Democrats.
Senator Tom Cotton, thank you for joining me. Follow him on Twitter at Sen, S-E-N, Tom Cotton. Even the Steeler fans can remember that, Sen Tom Cotton. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
I will be...
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.